Dexter Gordon and Johnny Griffin, both on their trusty tenors, performing Blues Up and Down live at a legendary concert at Carnegie Hall in 1978. George Cables on piano, Rufus Reed on bass, and Eddie Gladden on drums. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. Well, we are going back to our ongoing series on the Clinton Foundation and the Clintons and that labyrinth of pseudo-philanthropic entities organized around the Clinton Foundation. 62 days to go before the general election, and Hillary Clinton seems convinced that her only problem is beating Donald Trump to the presidency and claiming her rightful place in history. Yet she's at the center, the very center, of a political and legal maelstrom that not only has signaled very rough road ahead for her, but in the home stretch has begun to unleash its ambition-blocking power. The Clinton Foundation, officially the Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, and its collection of pseudo-philanthropic offshoots have put the Clintons and Hillary's presidential campaign under several microscopes. The alarm over what is being discovered and revealed is getting louder and louder as the scope of the investigation gets wider and wider. Financial expert and investor Charles Ortel, and you can go to his website where he has been posting his findings on charlesortel.com, O-R-T-E-L.com, who independently has been investigating the operations of the Clinton Foundation and its related entities, has been detailing for us here on Lead Stories his contention that the foundation for years has been engaging in massive charities fraud. In fact, he says that the Clinton Foundation is, in fact, the largest unprosecuted charity fraud that he has encountered so far. So in today's edition, we will continue to hear of his explosive findings, which have become essential to several ongoing investigations. And just to remind you how fortunate we are at Lead Stories to have him, you've been, as listeners to this program, you've been ahead, way ahead of even several governmental probes. Because Charles Ortel has devoted almost 2 years now into looking every day. That's all he's been doing, is digging up evidence about the Clinton Foundation and its operations and cataloging them with encyclopedic zeal. And he has been posting the documents, and this is just to let you know, as you know how we do it here, it's not just saying this, you can go and look yourself at the evidence. It's on his website, Charles Ortel, O-R-T-E-L.com. And Charles, thanks for being with us once again.
It's my great pleasure, Eutrice. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I understand after Labor Day, you have entered a new vigorous phase of your own investigation into the Clinton Foundation. And this involves posting, like Martin Luther, posting what you have found on the door, meaning the your website. You're posting things every day for the next 40 days. Let's start there. What are you doing and why are you doing it?
Well, thanks, Eutrice, for bringing it up. So, as you mentioned, I've been studying this for a long time, and my training is in these types of deep dives into thickets of numbers and words and legalities. And I appreciate that that's a nerdy existence that not everybody, or not many people, frankly, share. So I've been waiting for the general public and the media to get sufficiently interested in this topic to really dig into it. And while, thanks to you and to others, while there has been some building interest in the Clinton Foundation, really ever since last year around the March-April timeframe, 2015, it's taken a while for, I think, the mainstream media and the general public to appreciate that the real scandal here, as bad as any pay-for-play activities may well be, the real scandal and the one that's easiest to document and easiest to prosecute has to do with the charity. And the reason, I mean, that's every bit is in some ways worse than pay-to-play, because in the case of this charity scandal, which I believe, when you count all the money that I see out there, is probably in the order of $100 billion. This is a case where people who should know better, Bill and Hillary and Chelsea, all of whom have degrees from top institutions and have had, you know, in adult life, every advantage. These are powerful people who have been taking and soliciting and taking money, but charitably, as it were, not making sure that the money went to its intended purposes. And, you know, if you want to be more critical, arguably using or allowing some of this money to be used both to support the Clinton wing of the Democratic Party and perhaps to feather their own nests. So, you know, this is a story. It's a tangled tale. I hit on it. I've said before, I don't like the Clintons. You know, I don't know them, but just reading about them, I don't like the way they behaved. I don't like what they did with the offices that they managed to obtain. You know, I think it's incumbent upon people, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, if you get into high office, you should certainly try to do a lot more good than harm. And I don't think any one of them did that. And so that's distressing. That said, when I lit on this, I was in a mode where I wanted to learn more about how charities actually report and to the public. And I found, I mean, I don't particularly like this current administrator of the IRS or the IRS generally, but I think the way the IRS and the states and federal entities try to regulate charities is quite interesting, because unlike what you find when you look at either a publicly traded company or a private company in some depth, for a charity you can find out a tremendous amount of information, a massive amount of information. And with that information, particularly the information that's on state and foreign filings combined with the federal filings, you can really figure out what's going on from the outside. And that's a good thing, because you know, there's so many charities, also a good thing, but not enough people in the IRS to really regulate them. So I think the IRS and other authorities rely on people like me to flag these sorts of issues. And so when I flagged it back last year in March of 2015, I fully appreciated, though I'm not involved in partisan politics, that pursuing this path would create political issues, big political issues, for the Democrats and for Hillary Clinton in particular, which is why, starting earlier this year, I tried to warn that I'm not a Democrat, actually technically a lapsed registered Republican, but I reached out to my Democratic friends and I said, listen, you know, you've got a big problem here, and don't think people aren't going to focus upon it, because they are. And they wouldn't listen. People in the Democratic Party, they wouldn't listen. So now we are where we are. I understand from the political experts today marks really the official opening of the presidential campaign. Everything else was sort of the junior varsity period of it, the practice period. This is now when, you know, people will be polled, the likely voters. What are they going to do? And this is when the heavy artillery comes out, and this is when people across the media spectrum around the world will, I thought, be very interested in, you know, this issue. So as we speak, people who are working with me are tightening up a document. I provided a draft to you, Trace, to just take out the typos and everything. That should be up on my website, and it's about 6,000 words long. It's pitched both to the general audience and to the professional, to go through, in general terms, what I see and then to give you the building blocks that you need to see what I see. Because unless you understand a little bit about how charity laws work, their peculiarities, the requirements the charities must follow, you won't immediately see why the Clinton Foundation is in such bad shape and why it is such a textbook case that must be exposed and, I think, prosecuted. So we start today with a general overview wherein I've laid out actually all of the 40 exhibits. And mind you, the 40 exhibits only cover the period from 1997 to 2011. And I have more coming, but we're going to get through the 40 exhibits on that period first. Because the Clinton Foundation, the president, Donna Shalala, and their supposed outside counsel, Kathy Keneally of DLA Piper, they made a big mistake last year after I warned them, in my opinion, after I warned them they needed to amend all their filings. They tried to play cute, and they only amended certain filings, 2010 and forward. They failed to amend the ones that really need to be amended, going all the way back to the beginning. And then they made the compound of that error, in my view, by going before the world and saying, we fixed everything. They took it a step far. They said, too far. They said, listen, we really don't need to fix anything because we've already done it properly. But in an abundance of caution, in so many words, to go further than we really need to do, we are now going to amend certain filings. And with that, everything's hunky-dory. So I basically, in this memo that's out there, should be out there today, take you through why that is a bold-faced, ignorant set of lies. But obviously, the people who made that determination never studied the defective history of the Clinton Foundation that begins on October 23, 1997. They never studied the rules. They never studied the state filings. They never studied the international filings. Or if they did study them, that is to say, if the lawyers actually studied those filings and reached this conclusion, I would argue they're guilty of professional misconduct.
Well, you're somebody who should be taken seriously in this regard because it was your voice and your independent action and your independent inquiry and investigation that caused the light to be shining on GE and General Motors and AIG back in 2008 before the crash on Wall Street, where you said, these companies are engaging in fraud of a major order, and in fact, they were the tipping point of that iceberg, and you were ahead of it, you warned people about it, and they kind of, what do you know? You're not an official organization in the sense that you're an official investigative body, but you have sufficient... you are regarded as you were described as one of the finest forensic type guys on Wall Street. You were an independent and still are an independent financial expert. You really have a passion about philanthropy and what it ought to do and the standards it ought to operate by. So when you raise an alarm, it's like, you know, I hate to remember that commercial when such and such a person talks, people listen. when you talk and you talk about the Clinton Foundation, and you have been for quite some time now, people ought to be listening. Do you get the sense that people are listening?
I think, Yatrice, actually thanks to you in part. I think that absolutely people are starting to listen there. This is, there's a person I've obviously never met him, but I've studied his work, Francis Bacon, the great thinker, who has many, many pithy comments. But one of them, I think, is that he said that people are more moved by affirmatives than by negatives. In other words, you know, when you're positive, people are more inclined to say, oh, that's great. But when you're negative, people run away. And I think this is... this and GE and the crisis are all birds of a feather. You know, when you spot a major problem, people who fail to see it, who are involved regulating problems, are nervous that you could be right because it means they were wrong. And so, you know, there is a natural period. I remember, actually when I started on this back in late early 2007 on GE, I remember myself wondering whether I actually had gone crazy to think that, you know, the GE could be in as bad a place as I believe it was and as I believe it still is. I went through a process of self-doubt. I tried to answer each of those doubts. The more I did, and I started questioning and getting answers that made more sense to me than the public seemed to think. And, you know, you go through a process. In the case of GE, it took me almost 2 years. In the case of the Clinton Foundation, it's now running up on 2 years. And it seems to me that's about the length of time it's going to take the wider world to question fundamental assumptions. I mean, who would believe that a former president of the United States in the Internet age, where people can check anything, would flit around the world and break laws everywhere he landed? Who would believe that? I mean, who would believe that the former president of the United States, popular as he was when he was president, despite the foibles, let's just say, who would believe that that person would actually go around the world soliciting money for a charity to which he had no legal connection? He wasn't a trustee of any part of the Clinton Foundation or an executive until late in 2009. Yet he personally signed documents around the world, all over the world. He and Ira Magaziner, another person who had no legal connection to the foundation until about 2006 or 7 in Magaziner's case. But who would believe that a former president of the United States who had been the attorney general, taught law in Arkansas, was a Rhodes Scholar, Yale Law School graduate, taught law, attorney general, governor of the state, president for 2 terms, who would ever imagine that such a man would surround himself with other lawyers and accomplished people and immediately corrupt a charity that was supposed to merely set up a presidential archive and research facility in his hometown or in the capital of his home state? Now, who would ever imagine that? But that's exactly what it seems that he did. And so the story of, you know, on the one hand, the story of the facts is the record is so big here in terms of, you know, pages. You know, there are thousands of pages. And obviously I'm not going to publish thousands of pages, but I will be publishing hundreds. And there are links to probably tens and hundreds of thousands of pages in the public record. Who would ever have thought that a former president of the United States would be so stupid as to think he could get away telling one big fictional tale and that nobody would ever check him? I mean, as recently as yesterday, he had the gall to go out in Cleveland, I think it was, or somewhere, on Labor Day, and claim that, you know, he sort of thought of himself as Robin Hood, only he wasn't stealing money from anybody. Well, hang on, the way I look at it, he's Robin Hood in reverse. I mean, he's sitting there, people assume that he's a responsible person and that trustees around him are responsible. He's sitting there asserting the need for billions of dollars to be sent towards the Clinton Foundation, yet they've never put in the type of controls that are required for any foundation, large or small. You're supposed to have an independent board of trustees who could stand up to the founder. And that board of trustees has 3 duties, 3 paramount duties, a duty of care to take the time to make sure that they're actually, you know, the requisite time to investigate what's going on, that they understand the rules, a duty of loyalty, which means if there's a conflict of interest between the trustee's personal interest and the foundation's, that they make sure to guard the foundation's interests over their own. And lastly, a duty of obedience. And that means in a duty of obedience to the law, to all laws, state, federal, foreign. A charity is not supposed to engage in any illegal activity. So who would ever imagine, you know, that the former president of the United States would do this kind of stuff? I mean, we're not talking about, you know, the current president of the Philippines, who evidently doesn't have much in the way of an education. I mean, we're talking about somebody who is very smart and you know, had all sorts of training, and we're talking about his wife, who's supposed to be one of the smartest lawyers in the world, daughter, PhD, and then, you know, look at the credentials of all these trustees. Yet, you know, instead of doing what they were supposed to do, these people decided, oh, well, that's kind of boring, I guess. You know, we'll get that thing built in Little Rock, but let's go off around the world and chase rainbows. It's crazy.
Well, and then, you have ascertained, or you estimate that at least $100 billion is involved here. The foundation solicited and accepted and processed up to that much, at least $100 billion. This is huge money.
Well, let me correct you on that. The foundation did not itself process $100 billion, but people in league with the foundation. So the Global Fund is the biggest piece of that, the biggest piece of the alliance. People in league with Bill Clinton, Jacques Gupta, in his capacity as chairman of the Global Fund, who was with Bill, co-chairman of the America India Foundation, who paid routed money to Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea through a company between 2002 and 2008, through this nexus of connections that are purposefully omitted from the Clinton Foundation website so that you don't see these connections. It's through that, you know, they created this gigantic international network. The Global Fund, UNITAID, the Clinton Foundation, the American Indian Foundation, International AIDS Trust, the Haiti Relief Operation, the Tsunami Relief Operation, all of that put together. And then all of the deals that what are called private gain transactions, where donors of the foundation, through connections gleaned by their relationship with the foundation, were able to both pocket off-market loans and equity investments through multilateral organizations and increase the value of their private companies. All of that big, gigantic, mulligatawny stew of corruption, that's about $100 billion. All of that.
And yet, according to the filings, it's really not all accounted for. Where did the money go?
Well, that's why I'm calling in my latest piece today, the State Attorney General of Arkansas should forthwith, and by forthwith I mean before we get off this phone call, should appoint a conservator, not me and not anybody connected to the Clintons, but an independent conservator should march into the offices in Arkansas of the Clinton Foundation immediately, seize the books and records, seize all bank accounts, and then appoint forensic accountants to go in and get to the bottom of just that question you posed. Because there has never been a lawfully compliant financial audit of this operation since day one on October 23rd, 1997. Never, ever, ever. And you can tell that in any forensic accountant or any normal accountant, frankly, with, say, you know, two semesters of college accounting, can tell immediately by looking at the front cover of the purported, quote, audits prior to December 31st, 2009, you'll see immediately that these are not audits. These are reviews. They're not even done in the initial period, 97 to 2004. They weren't even done in compliance with U.S. accounting rules. And that flatly states that in the audits, in the financial reports, I should say, that are purposefully omitted from the Clinton Foundation for that period, but are available on the Commonwealth of Massachusetts Attorney General Charity Bureau website. So you can see for yourself what I'm talking about. I mean, they've never, it's as if you go to school. I mean, I suppose maybe the Clintons and the people around them long for those days of, you know, pass-fail and grades don't matter. It's, you know, for this foundation, it's as if there's, you know, not even a pass-fail system. You know, you just throw the money towards the Clinton Foundation, don't ask too much about where it ended up, and then accept, you know, some fancy speech about Bill Clinton. You know, I'm Robin Hood and I'm taking care of you. But there's no evidence of that. And, you know, when you look at, when you look with a trained eye at the filings that are filed at federal level and state level, and then at the audits, which are missing in some cases, garbled in other cases, all incorrect, all non-compliant, right away, if you have any experience with finance, you know this is a mess. And so the big question is, for me, is not how big is the mess. The question for me is, why have so many people allowed this mess to fester for so long? I mean, I understand why when Bill was president, the IRS might not have gone so aggressively against the Clinton Foundation, But that only explains the period through the 20th of January 2001. So what happened under the Bush years? And then why, under the Obama years, would Valerie Jarrett and the president, by inference, have signed this, you know, this loosey-goosey, meaningless agreement on either November 16th, 2008, or December 16th, 2008, depending on which version you believe is the real version. And then, you know, that states that everything's great with the Clinton Foundation in so many words. What goes on actually for page after page extolling the virtues of the Clinton Foundation. Why would you sign such an agreement and then become the, you know, an historic president with your party in charge of the House and the Senate? You're basically invulnerable for 24 months anyway. Why would you have done all that? And then when your people got to you and started explaining the condition, the true condition of the Clinton Foundation, which was dire on the very date where this MOU was signed, why would there be no emails, you know, rushing around the system and causes for alarm, saying, wait a minute, we've been sold a load of bunk here. This foundation is not legally authorized properly. It's hemorrhaging cash. Its numbers don't make any sense. You know, why are there no cries for alarm, no emails rushing around, either in the Clinton Foundation emails, the Clinton emails, or frankly, in the Obama system? You know, why are there no Jared emails saying, you know, hey, Hillary and your people, what the heck? You know, what's going on here? How come your main operation here in Boston, how come it appears never legally to have been authorized? And how come, in fact, on March 31st, 2008, it's licensed to operate in Massachusetts was yanked? You know, we'll explain that. How could that have happened? You know, you've taken all this money, and you then negotiate with me when I'm not yet in control of the White House, and you're telling me everything's fine. Everything certainly was not fine. So how are we going to arrive at the real truth? I mean, how come there's no sort of tension in these emails? Because I'll tell you what, I'm not involved in politics, but we couldn't have the kind of conversation on this radio interview that I might have if I had been confronted with the variance between, you know, what I was told and underlying reality had I been the President of the United States.
Well, people are beginning to look. News organizations are beginning to ask these kinds of questions now about the operation of the Clinton Foundation. But they're asking it largely in the context of, well, did the foundation actually serve as a kind of clearinghouse for well-connected people so that they can get favors out of the State Department headed by Hillary Clinton while they needed to get special consideration from the Obama administration, or whether the donations to the foundation really represented fees that these clients, whether the foundation was actually a consulting practice is basically what they're saying. But in the meantime, the media themselves seem to be deliberately moving away from the central core question, which to me is, is the Clinton Foundation even legal? Did it engage in legal activity at all? Why was it unaccountable for so long? What did President Obama and his administration know, and when did they know it? The same would apply to Bush. What did Bush know about this foundation? When did they know it? In other words, here's a foundation, simply because it was headed in part by a former president, they were essentially given a free pass to do whatever it is they wanted to do. But now we see that several foreign governments are beginning to really take umbrage at the fact that they think that they were taken for a ride when they were approached by Bill and Hillary and the foundation itself to partner with them on particular initiatives, and with a good heart and with good meaning and with an interest in philanthropy. They contributed so generously to so many different endeavors, only to find out, like the government of Norway, they gave X amount of money, but Y amount of money shows up as being officially the gift from Norway. What does this suggest to you?
This is a great question, so let me try to peel them apart and take them one by one. The first question that you raise, I mean, is really the central one that people are ignoring here, and that is, you know, what exactly is the Clinton Foundation under the law? Now, the simplest way I can explain it is that if Utrice and I were going to set up a foundation to cater to homeless people in Florida, then our application would go into one kind of a box. That is a, you know, that's a local concern, maybe just in one state. Maybe we're just going to solicit for donations in one state. That's a relatively easy thing for the IRS and the Attorney General or whoever in Florida regulates charities to control. You know, you don't have to guess what's going on. I mean, they may want to double check and see, you know, were we really giving money to homeless people in Florida, or were we buying cars for ourselves or going on vacation? But, you know, that's something that the arm of the law doesn't need to be very long, because you're operating in one state inside the United States. So the IRS realizes that, and they have tougher scrutiny for organizations like the Clinton Foundation that decided very early on it was going to operate internationally. And so when you go back into the forms, which are quite exhaustive, that have to be filed before you get authorized for federal tax exemption and then subsequently for state tax exemption, on that form it's very clear whether you intend to operate internationally. There's special boxes. You have to put down the code, and you have to check a box for operating internationally, which they did not do. So it's very, very clear in the beginning that what they were raising money for and what they aimed to do was quite simply and purely to raise the money and the required endowment to operate a building, a complex in Little Rock on reclaimed ground in a portion of the city that had been run down, that was to study not whatever Bill Clinton woke up the next morning and wanted to think about, but his term as president twice of the United States of America. That's what it was supposed to do. And there's a statute that has been, you know, passed by Congress and signed into law that regulates how these presidential libraries are supposed to be administered. It's crystal clear. That's what the money was supposed to go for. And so if you want to change your purpose, not your activities, but your purpose, you have to go, according to the rules I see and the precedents I see and the experts I consult, you have to go and make the case to the IRS why it is they should allow you to change the purpose. And typically the way that works is, I understand, the IRS will say, well, hey, Utrice, you and Charles said you were going to do this homeless thing down in Florida, and now you want to chase rainbows in Papua New Guinea. You know, well, before we let you do that, you know, how are you doing on the homeless project? You know, how far along are you? And, you know, by the time press reports suggest that Bill and his minions were out traipsing around internationally, very little progress had actually started on the main foundation. So had they had to make the kind of disclosure which is typical to the IRS, like here's what we've done so far and here's why we want to change the purpose, they would have been turned down. But it doesn't even matter. We don't need to guess, because in their own filings in the early period, 2001-2003, that is, they state, and 4 in state filings, they state categorically that they never changed their purpose. So, you know, it's clear that, you know, they basically regarded, the people around the Clinton Foundation regarded this foundation much in the same way that you might regard your driver's license, that with your driver's license you can drive a car anywhere you want. That's sort of what they viewed this authority as being, and that's not what it is. You know, it is far more limited and far more specific. And so I don't have a good answer yet as to why the Bush administration might have let this mess explode the way it did. And I think that's something that, you know, I'm not a professional investigator, I'm just a dude. But I think, you know, people with real professional investigative credentials should be asking, you know, why did the IRS under George W. Bush for 8 years allow this mess to become a gigantic international embarrassment? You know, why did this happen? Who, you know, might it be that part of the answer lies in who is in charge of the tax-exempt organization department, which oversees all charities? And that person was Lois Lerner, the very controversial figure, Lois Lerner. Is there something rotten having to do with Lois Lerner in all this? And, you know, maybe there is. So there's that period, and then you get to the Obama period. We talked a little bit about the memorandum of understanding. You know, why aren't the Obama people a lot more upset with the Clintons than a normal person might be? I mean, after all, let's not forget, Michelle and Barack Obama gave this mess, the Clinton-Bush mess, over $200,000 of their Nobel Peace Prize winnings in 2010. You know, that I think they made a second gift of $15,000, and they gave a small rounding error increment out of the Nobel money came in a foreign currency, and they said they'll give it $200,000 plus a little extra based on translation gains. So yeah, that's a fair amount of money to give to this enterprise. And now, you know, Barack Obama and his people want to set up a foundation, want to run it. You know, they have a lot of skin in this. And so why aren't they a lot more upset?
Which brings me to the next question about whether just the pattern of behavior and just the conduct of this foundation under Bill and Hillary Clinton, does it not make the case on the face of it that this was actually conceived after the initial point of getting it up and running under the appropriate tax laws, that there came a point when it was a fantastic way to make a lot of money under the radar. And it became a criminal enterprise and in a conspiratorial way. And you have people at top levels of governments, not only in the United States, but outside of it, possibly being embarrassed about entertaining the idea that these might be crooks. This might be a crooked operation. So they left it alone because it might have been more trouble than it was worth to just open this can of worms. So just leave it alone. Hopefully nobody would notice, and privately they could try to do something to persuade them to fix it. But does this not establish one of the basic issues here as it regards the Clinton Foundation, that it was actually conceived as a criminal enterprise? This was not accidental. It was actually designed this way.
Well, you know, that's why I'm going through the 40 exhibits. So when you go back into the history, and I hesitate to dredge up this history, but when you go into it, October 23rd, 1997, when you get into the timeline of what was going on with the Charlie Tree fundraising scandal, that being, you know, all these scandals that the Clintons had beginning when they really walked into the front door of the White House drenched in scandal, and set about raising what they characterized as being a bipartisan and a prominent Republican, prominent Democrat co-chairs of a legal defense trust. And that percolated along for a number of years until it turned out that a man called Charlie Tree, who was, I believe, either connected to foreign nationals or himself a foreign national, had arranged for hundreds of thousands of dollars to flow into this defense trust, and that was a huge scandal, causing that first defense trust to have to be shut down at the end of 1997. So this foundation emerged by October 23rd, 1997. And a second expense trust was created. And, you know, I just guessing, you know, this is the team that allegedly rented out the Lincoln bedroom and seats on Air Force One and all that. This is a team of sharp people. You know, John Podesta, I think, eventually got involved in this team inside in the White House and then afterwards as advisor to various campaigns and people around the Clintons and, frankly, the Obamas as well. They looked at this, I'm sure, as guests, and said, you know, the rules on soliciting after-tax donations for political campaigns are very, very tough. Disclosure is required. You're not allowed to get money for a domestic political campaign from a foreign government by statute. But for a foundation, Katie, bar the door. There are no limits on how much money somebody might give to a private charity. I mean, you can give as much as you want. You may not get a full tax deduction against your income, but you can give as much as you want. And if you're a foreign government, you can give as much as you want, too. Now, the only rub here for foreign governments is that there are special rules that do apply to ordinary mortals, particularly those who solicit money here in New York. And those rules dictate that you've got to list out the names and the details of every single foreign grant, or every single grant that you get from any government, and you have to do it for foreign governments and domestic governments. So the Clintons set about harnessing their snouts to this, you know, this cornucopia of incoming money, and didn't ever believe, evidently, still don't believe, that they have to fill out the paperwork properly. They made a big to-do in 2008, late in 2008, of saying, we're disclosing all our information from the beginning about donors. But, you know, from 2004 to 2008, well, actually, starting in 2004 for sure, there is an unmet requirement in New York that you have to provide details to the state of New York and to the public who care to look at these forms here in New York about every single foreign grant. They haven't done it yet. And the reason they haven't done it, I believe, and others believe, is because this foundation, with its sloppy controls, its trustees who are not independent, no independent accounting firm, this organization may well have raised money from multiple people for the same purpose. And, you know, the foundation doesn't want to let that secret out. So how do you keep it quiet? You don't provide this incriminating evidence, except you have to. So you asked a question I didn't answer. You know, am I optimistic that governments are going to do something about this? And I think now, thanks to the attention you're giving it, the fact that it is a presidential season, and that, you know, like it or not, the Clinton team and the Trump team are going to have to answer questions about all their activities. I think it's appropriate for the general public to start demanding answers here, to force these officials who haven't done their jobs to admit the errors of their ways, to go back over these books, and as I say, because the Clintons and the team around the Clintons have proven resistant, unbelievably resistant. They're like bad cockroaches you can't get rid of. As recently as this weekend, we have Hillary Clinton with all this brouhaha saying that now she thinks Bill shouldn't have to go until after the election and maybe Chelsea should stay. That's rubbish. There's not another family, not another political family out there that I know of that could be potentially has shown a willingness to let the world believe they can be purchased, and that has people who still want to run for office. I don't think Chelsea's renounced her political ambitions. Hillary certainly hasn't. And, you know, this you're not supposed to mix charity and political activities in this way. It's strictly forbidden, particularly if you're raising money internationally. And
you're saying that in Arkansas, at least in Arkansas, where this foundation was incorporated initially, the state attorney general can just go in and shut it down and essentially conduct a raid of the offices, seize all the records and so forth, since they have not been forthcoming and they have lapsed in filing their reports and so forth. Can this also be duplicated in other states, considering that the foundation was soliciting money in several states at the same time? Are states' attorneys general entitled, or by law, can they do these kinds of things and say, listen, it has come to our attention that there may be huge irregularities here, and we're taking these extreme measures preemptively to kind of stop the hemorrhaging, and we'll see where this takes us. Whatever it is we discover, we'll see where it takes us from here. Could they do that before, say, Congress files? Congress does its investigation, or some other entity does an investigation?
Absolutely. I mean, there's sort of several pieces to the question. So Arkansas is the lead state because I would argue, because the main foundation and several of the other foundations are all organized in Arkansas. So it would be very convenient for the Attorney General of Arkansas to just, as I say, march into the offices and say, you know, give us your books and records right now, and we are appointing a conservator to guard the value of this foundation right now. The companion move that makes a lot of sense is for any attorneys general in any other U.S. state who have concerns, who see what I see, to immediately notify the Clinton Foundation that until they have clarified, stabilized the operations, and filed, made complete, truthful filings, they cannot solicit inside any of these states. So you have those two moves, that the attorney general locks down the records in Arkansas, and then other attorneys generals cut off the fundraising until this has been, you know, the reports have been corrected, if they can be, then inside the U.S. there's one set of moves. Outside the U.S., they operate in, it's tough to say exactly because they don't report it the way you're supposed to, but as a guess, they operate in at least 50 countries, solicit and operate. So any one of those countries could do the same thing and could say, you know, listen, in the U.K., we have this. We see you have this fundraising operation. You have two corporations that I can find in the U.K. We want, you know, your registered representatives here in the U.K. We're putting you on notice. No more fundraising. We want to see your books and records in the U.K. And we want to understand exactly why you are lawfully constituted. Yes, in country, and then countries where large, where the governments have given large donations, you know, could go to the Clinton Foundation and say, you know, should check their records and say, you know, how much money have we given? I checked with the government of Norway, and I got an answer that was very comprehensive because the government of Norway went ahead and they checked every single conceivable way in which, in theory, money went from Norway to the Clinton Foundation, and it doesn't foot with the Clinton Foundation numbers. On the other hand, I checked with Canada, and, you know, I got one answer, and I knew that was wrong because I had stuff in the records elsewhere that showed a different answer, and I pushed them again, and I pushed them again. And similarly, I mean, these big governments around the world should be asking, hey, you know, we sent you XYZ money. Show us where it shows up in your books, please. Big foundations, the Gates Foundation, has a serious problem. They've given more than $200 million to the Clinton Foundation, and the amounts that you aggregate in Gates Foundation books do not square with amounts that are disclosed in Clinton Foundation books, and there are large discrepancies. Those should be reconciled. And that's why I say you need a conservator and you need an accounting firm much better than, frankly, the local office of PwC in Little Rock or even the New York office of PwC, which seems to have fallen down the job. You certainly don't want to use the accounting firm that was used from 97 all the way, I think 97, all the way through to 2012, BKD, because they've done a horrible job. And actually, this isn't that complicated. I mean, GE was complicated. This is, on an order of magnitude scale, where GE's, let's say, 97, this is a 3. It's not that complicated. So, you know, a decent firm of forensic accountants could go in a short period of time, and start by demanding to see all bank accounts, bank records of the Clinton Foundation. Just walk them in to one room, every single bank account. When was it opened, by whom, how much money, where to come from, reconcile all that. You should be able to do that in 2 weeks, 3 weeks maybe, if the records have been preserved. It's not complicated. So
are taxpayers, whether here or abroad, are taxpayers, do they have enough skin in this game to independently take action?
Well, taxpayers have, I don't know how a taxpayer would take action, I mean, other than contacting a regulatory authority and saying, you know, get on this. But, you know, the basic reason in which, when you read the legislative history in this country of charities, the reason charities gain tax exemptions, many reasons, but one of the main reasons is a calculation is done that the voluntary aspect of a charity and the good works that can be done by thoughtful volunteers relieve the burdens of government so that, you know, the charities do work that's good, has a positive impact at lower costs, typically, than the government might do it. And so the theory is, you know, if that's what's going on, we ought to encourage charities because, you know, they do good work and they're less expensive than paying government workers. On the other hand, a bad charity like this one, this set of charities, does enormous damage. It does, and it's not damage that that we should just say, well, you know, we don't want to talk about it. We need to make an example of this because there are plenty of wonderful charities that operate around the world. There are probably presidential foundations that do great things. I haven't really studied the other ones as closely as I, obviously, as I've studied this one. But, you know, who knows? Maybe Jimmy Carter's doing good work around the world. I don't know. But, you know, we don't want to give tyrannical governments an excuse of saying, you know, we don't want to let your foundations into our country because we understand that you don't even control your own foundation. You don't know how to control your foundations. Who knows what this foundation over here is really going to do inside Russia or China or India or, you know, Cuba or Venezuela or wherever. So, you know, I think there are a lot of great reasons in general why the public should rise up and say, listen, we want some straight answers on this. Enough of this baloney, enough of this getting up in a scripted setting and getting a bunch of starving African children, you know, all cleaned up and telling us what great work you did, when there are no numbers on this charity. How much money did you get in what period, from what people, where did you spend it, and to what effect? Show us the numbers, and show us numbers that are verified by independent third parties who are competent. Show us that immediately. Now, governments, on the other hand, there are governments that have given massive sums of money here. The biggest donor to the Clinton Foundation, it's an indirect donor, is the government of France, who, because it's the largest donor, or at least it shepherds monies that are taken from travelers who pass through French airspace and sends them into this pot in Switzerland called Unitaid, that the government of France, rough numbers, has probably given the Clinton Foundation $300 to $350 million. So the people in France, you know, should be saying to the Clintons, you got some splaining to do here. You know, what happened to this money? We took it from travelers who passed through our airspace. We passed it to a pot in Switzerland. And that pot was supposed to send it only to the poorest of the poor people in the world. And it seems to me that that money went in 6, 7, and 8, 2006, 7, 8, to an entity created by the Clinton Foundation that actually didn't legally exist, that it had its authorities revoked, and that has never made proper accounting for any money that went through it, and may or may not have done good things with that money. It may or may not have bought HIV/AIDS drugs. It may have not, or may not have checked carefully to make sure that those medicines were not adulterated. It may or may not have diverted sums that were directed from these travelers in France and elsewhere through Switzerland to this operation in Boston. But the one thing it definitely did not do is account properly for any of these inflows. The second thing it definitely did not do is establish itself lawfully anywhere in the world. So, you know, these are the type of questions that, in my experience on these complex matters, generally the big players are not the ones who are the most difficult. You know, what happened, they can be difficult, but the ones who really get difficult are sort of smaller players. So let's say, you know, the government of Korea gave money to Unitaid too. You know, taken from travelers in, I think, and passed through the Korean airspace. You know, the government of Korea appears to have been hoodwinked by the Clinton Foundation starting in 2007 or 8 or thereabouts. And then once again, hoodwinked, making an investment by the IFC or in league with the IFC and this laureate. So, you know, maybe it's the government of Korea is going to stand up and say, you know what, you know, stop your sales talk and your fancy political talk. We want it. We understand numbers. 1 + 1 = 2. Show us some numbers that make sense.
But in any event, the Clintons still have prevailed on their own terms. They're calling the shots. They're calling the shots as to whether they cooperate or not, whether they feel like obeying the law, you know, whether, you know, they cut their ties with the foundation. They're still in charge. And it is amazing that there has been so far no independent or overarching authority that could compel an action by the Clintons, or could just compel an independent action to shut it down, or just as you said, to march into the offices and seize their records. It's amazing that it continues, is what I'm saying. It seems as if nobody has come to a resolute decision with regard to the Clinton Foundation, and it's been operating since 1997, which says what exactly? What is it about the Clintons and their endeavors that has gotten this, have gotten these incredible amounts of protection and an unwillingness of the law to be the law?
Well, I think what's happened, Eutrice, is that, you know, over decades and maybe over recent years, and particularly since 99, what Jefferson observed centuries ago, with money we will get men, and with men we will get money. What's happened here is we have gone from, you know, two rival parties to the existence of a uniparty, where, you know, in the Democratic side, we had what I would argue was the fictional primary, where Hillary Clinton was just selected by Debbie Wasserman Schultz and installed as the candidate. And now we're fixing, you know, some might believe, to do the same thing at the presidential level, that Hillary will just be installed as our president. So when did I miss the part about America becoming a monarchy? Because I thought we were supposed to have, you know, real elections in this country, real contests, vigorous contests of ideas. That's what I want, and I think that's what people across the political spectrum want to see. And I, for one, am not going to put up with the notion that this election is going to be rigged and that we're just going to be given Hillary Clinton as our next president. So,
well, you know, we have to leave it there today. We're out of time. But we certainly will continue tomorrow this conversation. Thank you so much for being with us today, Charles.
Thank you.
And again, you can reach, you can see for yourself the supporting documents for everything that Charles Ortel has been laying out on Lead Stories at charlesortel.com. Stay tuned. Coming up next, The Infectious Myth with David Crowe. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. Let me know what you think about the program. And as always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. See you tomorrow. Bye-bye.